Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Nicole calling from Hamilton, and I needed to let everyone know that I really proudly support Vish and Creative Control. I have for many years, I will for many more, as long as he keeps delivering these amazing interview podcasts. When you hear one of Vish's interviews, you think he's known this guest for years, they're good friends. But the truth is, he approaches every interview, whether it's sort of up-and-coming indie artists or established icons or like famous intimidating comedians with a really deep, genuine curiosity, so he's never met this person, and the same really warm candor, as so he's known them forever. I think it really lends to a great chat, no matter who he's talking to, and for that reason, I think you should throw Vish, like what, $1 a month? He's got jokes. The jokes make it worth it. Support Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Visha's wife, and remember, when you name a dog Janet or Timothy, you are dragging humanity down just a little bit.
Adrian Teacher is a wondrous musician, songwriter, and singer based in Vancouver, British Columbia. Since 2009, Teacher has been a driving force in a fantastic band called Apollo Ghosts, in which he's the singer, lyricist, guitarist, and a multi-instrumentalist. The latest Apollo Ghosts record is actually a double album called Pink Tiger, which was released on March 11th, 2022 by You've Changed Records and prompted Adrian to return to this show so we could discuss things like wallpaper and home studio acoustics, The importance of exercising when you're not a jock. When the Edmonton Oilers traded Wayne Gretzky to the Los Angeles Kings on August 9th, 1988. Real money and online money. Being a school teacher and overcoming COVID-19. Enjoying the band Fleetwood Mac and making a double LP. Recording one of those two records by himself at home after temporarily losing hearing in one ear for a lengthy spell. The sound and lyrical motifs on this gorgeous record, Pink Tiger, touring, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol with additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and very friendly staff who will happily help you with all of your music, listening, and purchasing needs. You could go to them and say, hey, I want to order Pink Tiger by Apollo Ghost. Can you help me? And they'll say, yes. You can learn more about Blackbird at their website, blackbird.ca, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 679 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Adrian Teacher of Apollo Ghosts, with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
The bride should get all the glory. 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 The bride should get all.
Hello, Adrian. How are you?
Hello, Vish. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for asking. Where are you right now?
Right now, I am in my psychedelic closet in Vancouver, BC.
Why is this the psychedelic closet per se? I can kind of see what you're getting at, but...
Yeah, did a wallpaper job a few years ago to kind of just add some ambience to the recording space. So it's got like kind of like a blue and silver floral kind of thing going on in here. And it's just like my hidey hole.
Yeah, no, that's so you record... It's a closet, but you record in it? It's like your studio?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's like Harry Potter under the stairs kind of thing, you know?
Now, does the wallpaper, I'm being a little facetious, but like, you know how you have a music room and you want to kind of dampen things, you put dampeners up and all that sort of thing?
Yeah.
So wallpaper, this maybe isn't that dumb a question, but I wonder, actually, does the wallpaper contribute to that in any way?
It probably would, actually, yeah. Like, if it's just bare sort of, like, wall, there is, that, like, kind of... like
resonance?
Resonance. Yeah. And when I did put it up, it did... help with that a bit, but I also got some cheap foam off Craigslist and made my own sort of budget sound dampening material.
I see that. I don't know why that just occurred to me, because if you put, I had this room that I'm talking to you from was really really live until here. I'll show you. I'll just pull them.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure.
I put a curtain up. There were no records on the shelves yet when we first moved in. I started to do some interviews, and there's actually an ad that I did back in that era that I still use, and it's boomy for sure. And I keep meaning to redo it, but I just haven't because I'm lazy. Mm-hmm. And once I'm done with something, I'm kind of done. So I'm just like, fine. It's only like 30 seconds. But I put the records. Yeah. I put the records on the shelves. I put some books on that shelf. Curtain though, with there's a cloth curtain, and then I have a blind. I don't know. Yes. Maybe I sound a little boomy now the way we're talking, but I don't know if you've heard the show. I don't think it sounds boomy anymore. I think it sounds pretty good.
No, it sounds really good. Yeah. No, it's just, I don't know. I'm not like that, you know, I don't nerd out too much on that stuff, but like, just adding stuff basically, I think just helps.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I'm going to wallpaper the room now. Just going to see if that further takes away any boominess. Anyway, it's nice to chat with you. What's your, life and I was going to say, what's your day in Vancouver shaping up to be? But then it came out as, what's your life shaping up to be in Vancouver today, which is kind of a similar question.
Yeah.
How's your day going in Vancouver?
Yeah, it's going great, thanks. Yeah, it was a nice sunny morning. I have a pretty typical like routine, just like went and did some weightlifting with my friend Mark, followed by a croissant and coffee to destroy any of the progress made there. And then just kind of wandered around. The cherry blossoms are out, which is, you know, like a really special time in Vancouver. You know, just kind of looking at those, and then a late shower, and then crush a few emails, and here we are.
Yeah, I had a late. Half the day's I didn't do gone. Any weightlifting. I'm supposed to vacuum. I got to vacuum the whole stupid house. That's going to be my minor workout for the day. But I should do that. You do weightlifting? Is that a newer thing, or have you always done that?
I've been doing it about like 10 years.
Oh wow.
Just kind of like. Like, I'm not, like, a gym rat or anything. Like, I just, you know, we go a couple of times a week and just to maintain, like, a baseline strength kind of thing. Like, I really enjoy it. I do like to just, you know, it's a good stress reliever and,
Yeah, that's good. Fun. Do you ever do a...
Yeah.
I heard tell of a guy... do you know the comedian Joel McHale? I don't know if you know him. He was on...
I don't know. I don't think so. Well, maybe... Was he on your show?
No, sorry. He was on the show Community. He was the star of that show Community, and he's a comedian.
Okay,
and he's done... what was that thing he did? The Soup? He's like a... He's a comedian. Anyway, I heard him once on a podcast talking about it, because he's quite mus... He's like I'm not disparaging the fellow, but he's like a pretty boy comedian.
Yeah.
Like he's a handsome leading man.
Right,
he's been in movies. And every once in a while, there seems to be some call for him to take his shirt off, like a Matthew McConaughey or something. And so what people have observed is, this handsome comedian is very muscular. And what he said on an interview podcast once is they were like, you go to the gym all the time? He's like, no, I just do push-ups. Yeah. And they're like, what do you mean? You only do push-ups? He's like, I don't remember if he said he's never lifted a weight, but he's like, no, my routine is just push-ups and sit-ups. Yeah. Like, kind of like, basically, his workout routine is some semblance of a Rocky montage. Like, he doesn't, he's not punching meat, but he... Sorry, for the kids, that's not a euphemism. I mean, literally in the Rocky films, he punches sides of beef as a punching bag. Anyway, so then I started to do that for a while, because I agree, the baseline strength thing is also a stress reliever, right? Is that the...
Yeah. Yes. Well, I mean, I think, I never wanted... that was never, the goal, the six-pack or something like that. It was just go to, make sure my body doesn't fall apart when I'm, in my 50s or 60s or something.
Right.
But, I see those kind of people at the gym, and I just, shake my head in disbelief. And
the gym rat people, the gym rats.
They're just kissing their pecs in the mirror.
Oh, they're not doing that, are they? Really?
Drinking protein shakes and stuff, and I'm just I just can't handle. I just put on my headphones and just do my 32-minute workout and leave as quick as I can.
I had the high school experience I had was I really liked sports, but I didn't like the sports people in high school.
Yeah, exactly.
I love sport. I love basketball. I still I watch basketball every day. In fact, as we're speaking, the Final Four is today in college basketball, which is not, let's be frank, it's not the epitome of basketball greatness. It's just...
Yeah.
The stars of tomorrow struggling today is what it is. So you watch the games and you're like, these guys don't quite know what they're doing. But once in a while they kind of do and you get excited. Yeah. Anyway, I love basketball. Yeah. And but the sports people put me off. Just what they were interested in, it was enough to put me off. So if they liked being in the gym and doing that stuff, I would just contrarian. I would say, no, I don't want to do that. Even though I was relatively coordinated and athletic. I just didn't like it. But now, as probably you and I are around the same vintage, you've discovered, actually, if you want to live, you should go do the stuff those jock people were doing. And as a result, in our 30s, 40s, hopefully we make that realization and start running and doing stuff. So, but the thing is, since the pandemic, you can't go to the gym. Or you shouldn't, or you couldn't for a while, and now I guess you technically you're... you can. But I'm trying to be like, oh, instead of buying a bunch of weights, I'll just do push-ups every day and planking and core strength exercising, and I'll run. Sort of somewhat famously for those who hear the show, nothing about this show is famous, but I've talked about how I run in my house. Do you do any running as well as the weights?
I'm not a big runner. I like to walk.
Walking,
I prefer to walk.
Yeah.
But
it's all to quell anxiety. It's not to star in an action movie. I think you and I are on the same page.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, similar, like, sports trajectory. Like, just, yeah, like, you know, I loved sports and basketball and hockey and stuff when I was younger, too. And just, but what, yeah, threw me was just the kind of mindless, like, nationalism and just, you know, allegiance to, like, a team color and stuff. Like, just.
Oh, I hate teams. Really didn't, I don't like teams at all.
Yeah, like, just, you know, I don't know. I just, yeah, I'm not into that stuff.
Well, I mean, let me clarify. I think, like you, you know, for being in a band, you have to be a team player. In work environments,
yes,
what I'm saying is,
that is true.
I don't
is
go true. All in. When they traded Wayne Gretzky in 1988, the Oilers to the Kings, I was like, imagine that. I was like, I guess I must have been 11 or 10 when that happened.
Yeah.
Wait, right. I was born in 77, 88. Yeah, I guess I was about to turn 11 because it's August, I think, of 88. Anyway, they did that. Imagine that. You invest all your love into this team and this player.
Yeah.
And they win. They just won. They won like four Stanley Cups in like almost as many years. Yeah. And they say, that's not enough. Or we want, well, oh my God, crush me. And from that point on, I was like, oh, it's a business. And that made me even more cynical. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, to your point. Yeah, like I agree. Like it seemed like that was the day that hockey died for me too. Like, you know, also a Gretzky super fan had, you know, like. You know, the sports cards and the, you know, all that stuff.
Sweaters.
And, when that happened. Yeah. I remember when that happened too. And it was just kind of like, what? Like, what happened? You know, like, so.
Yeah. It's a drag. You know, I moved to Edmonton because he took a desk job at the Oilers and then he split.
Did he? Oh, wow.
Yeah, he split to be a ESPN or some kind of sportscaster.
Oh, okay.
And now he's in, do you watch TV at all, Adrian?
I mean, I would say that we don't have a TV, but I mean, I'm aware of, you know, like, you know, of Netflix and all that stuff. And
well,
I watch a lot of, British TV. I really like Channel 4 and, BBC. And
BBC.
Stuff.
The reason I asked the question is Wayne Gretzky is part of a cohort of men, celebrity men who are in as we're speaking, there's this like plethora of commercials with just celebrity men. Walking towards you while a bunch of shit is happening around them. And they want to sell you a cryptocurrency or travel plans. And what else? What is, with Gretzky, actually, it's sports betting.
But
I've noticed the trend is it's like Ewan McGregor, Matt Damon, Wayne Gretzky, just walking, like a walk and talk, like an Aaron Sorkin walk and talk. And then they're just trying to sell you bullshit. Like, you know, they're trying to sell you ways to get rid of your money with betting and crypto. And then the traveling, I like Ewan McGregor, but I like that commercial, actually. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
They use the Reckless Eric song in it, Whole Wide World. So for me, and my wife loves Ewan McGregor, I like Ewan McGregor. He seems fine.
Right.
So I like that. I like him. I like the idea of traveling. That's got a good message. It's like, are you really going to remember stuff you have? Aren't you going to remember the trips?
Oh, right. Yeah, I think I have seen that.
Yeah, that's nice. But arguably, should we be urging people to travel right now? I mean, my main point is the aesthetic is we'll just get some dudes to walk towards you on the screen and tell you about stuff.
Yeah.
And I find that. Yeah. So that's what Gretzky's doing now. He left Edmonton doing a sports betting ad. I just wanted to give you a Wayne Gretzky update. I think is
what I'm getting at. Yeah, there. I mean, I'm sure those are easy to script, cheap to film. And
it's all CGI. I think
they probably are just like zooming in as well and just like collecting Bitcoin as payment.
Anyway, that's someone said that actually. We should find out if all these crypto spokes celebrities are getting paid in money or crypto.
Yeah,
it would be curious to know. Sorry, I don't know. Are you into the? Do I sound cynical? Probably because I am. Are you into the whole bands are doing this now, NFTs and
whatever. Oh, the NFTs. Yeah, we actually, well, we did a music video kind of making fun of that. But yeah, yeah, I can't say that I am. I mean, I'm sure I'll regret it at some point, like, you know, maybe one day when NFTs become ubiquitous. But yeah, as it stands right now, it just seems very confusing and bizarre to like own a original digital copy of something. Like, I don't understand. I don't really understand how that's possible.
Have you ever seen, like, we see ads for banking and investing, but have you ever seen an ad for money?
An
like,
ad
that's
for,
where I'm at with it. Like,
oh,
they,
right.
They're selling you money.
Yeah.
They claim it's currency, right?
Yeah.
No one's ever had to be like, we need to sell people on money.
Yeah.
So we need to come up with an ad campaign to convince them.
Yeah.
I guess the, okay, wait a minute. Maybe I should backtrack. Debit cards, credit cards, kind of maybe the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's some not, it's understood that you use those things, but they're drawing from your actual money.
Right, yeah.
And not virtual money, but maybe I'm being old-fashioned, and maybe it's true. It's all pretty, since the advent of all these cards, when I was a kid, I used to look at my bank account, like, religiously.
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah.
You take a little, like, you take 20 bucks out, and you're like, how much I got left? Oh, no.
Well,
and
yeah.
Now, you know, I use all the cards, and then they tell me at the end of the month how it's going.
Right, yeah, and like little pie charts and stuff, yeah.
Do they send you pie charts? That sounds delicious. I didn't
get
a pie chart.
Yeah, I mean, if you go, I mean, at least on my online banking, if you go into the extra features, there's like, yeah, you can see pie charts of your budget or how you're spending your your pennies, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, see, we've learned some things from each other, I think, and hopefully people listening have as well. I appreciate this. How are you doing generally? I will get to the record and whether or not it was completely, my sense is it was mostly conceived in the last couple of years, right? Like during the,
yeah, for sure.
During the major thing. How has the thing been for you?
It's been, okay. We I'm a elementary school teacher. So in BC, they decided to kind of like keep school going, which, you know, in retrospect, I think was the right decision and, you know, felt pretty quite safe, you know, after we got our vaccines. The first, you know, kind of 6 months were a bit spooky because, you know, we had to go in and work and stuff and we didn't have the vaccine at that point. So that was a little spooky, but I think once we got vaccinated, it felt good. And, I was happy that kids were able to go to school and I, you know, in retrospect was the right decision. Cause you know, we have a niece and she, was in Ontario and it was like, she was just isolated and left alone and in front of a computer screen for like a year. So
yeah. Same with my kids here in Alberta. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but they were arguably, who's to say, I guess, but arguably they were safer from the from the virus. But yes, I'm having to. My daughter has been struggling with for sure. My youngest is my daughter, and she's behind with reading. But
right.
I have stepped in, and we've gone from you know, one out of five. She's in French immersion too, so it's very complicated to get the sounds. She's a very good visual artist and she loves drawing. And what I figured out is, and tell me, you're a teacher.
Yeah.
So what I figured out, she's having lots of trouble aligning the a letter with the sound of the letter, particularly when two letters look the same. So what I figured out is she's a visual learner.
Yeah.
And so she'll just, the other day, what was the word? The word on one of her dictées, her tests was,
The
English part was funny. And for four days, so she gets the assignment on like a Friday and then they have a test the following Friday. And for the 4 days of Monday to Thursday, F-U-N-N-Y. But, Monday to Wednesday. Then on Thursday, she pulled out F-U-N-N-G. And that was when the light bulb, little, like lowercase g. And I was like, oh, if you think about it, the G and the lowercase Y, kind of similar looking. And I figured that out. So I will tell you, I'm very proud. I stepped in. I changed her learning habits. We've gone from 1 out of 5, 4 out of 10, to the last two tests, 9 out of 10, 4 out of 5.
Amazing.
And it's just because I don't know if this is a testament to me or not. I just identified the problems and it's helping her. I don't know that she's reading or understanding any better, but I came up with some mnemonic devices and And so I think a lot of kids are going through that, is what you're getting at. And,
yes.
And I've experienced that too, but I also was,
yeah.
And I felt bad for every teacher that was forced to go in, if I might say.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Did you get that? Was there grumbling among your colleagues about having to go in?
I think at first it was a little scary, but then there's also just kind of like, you know, just a sense of duty and like, you know, civic duty where, you know, it's like nurses and doctors are in there and it's like, you know, I just sort of see, at least I can't speak for everybody, but just for myself, it's like, no, like this is an essential service happy to take part. And the safety protocols were clear and very, you know, I don't know. I felt safe. I felt fine.
And you've been.
And I actually didn't get COVID at all through school. I actually did end up getting COVID somewhere else. But
oh, you did.
I did. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You emailed me about this. I forgot about that. Do you know how you got it?
Yeah, it was just like when things were opening up. I got it about. It was about 6 weeks ago, maybe.
Oh man!
And just at a pub, and just hanging out with some friends.
Oh no, no one's wearing masks at the pubs, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, like when you're eating and drinking and stuff, like it's not required. So
it's very confusing.
Yeah,
Adrian, I'm sorry, yeah. I don't mean to be the stick in the mud guy, but I'm very confused by this logic that you, because there was a thing for a while in Canada in certain places and provinces where you had to walk into the restaurant with the mask on.
Of course,
but then when you sat down. You could take it off for the whole time.
I
was like, what is the air quality issue that I'm not... Why is it safer at the table?
Or
just the cognitive dissonance of it. Anyway, sorry. I'm really sorry to hear that. How did it go for you? How are you doing now?
Oh, yeah. I was fine. I have been obviously like, you know, triple boosted and all that stuff. So, for me, it was just like a really bad cold. And so...
Nothing lingering now. You're okay.
Nope. No, okay. I was fine. Yeah.
Good.
Got through it. Yeah.
Good. So you made this. I don't want to thank you for sharing that. And I don't want to get in any arguments about this with anybody. And I keep spouting off about things where I don't understand them. and that's just where I'm at. But, real quick though, as a teacher, do you think my method with my daughter is good?
Oh, yeah. No, you are totally right with that. Like, you know, blends, like letter blends are tricky for young ones. Like there are, you know, particular letters that in English anyway that, you know, kids frequently mix up B's and D's, P's and Q's, Y and G for sure. So it's not anything to be concerned about. And, just that the fact that you're reading with your child and helping her with her, you know, spelling and stuff, like she'll be fine. Yeah.
She comes up with her own little devices. Yeah. She figured out that lowercase B has a belly. She didn't have a thing for lowercase D, and I came up with derriere.
Hey, perfect.
Because it's
got
a little butt. So the D in lowercase D's got a little butt, and lowercase B has got a little belly. That's where
I love it.
She just made it about the body. Yeah, thank you.
If you hold your you can hold your thumbs like this. Can't see because this is audio. You can also do the B.
Put your fist together. Yeah, that's a good idea too.
Yeah, your right hand is your D and your left is your B.
That's a good idea. But I feel like she'll
that's another one.
She has like short-term memory stuff with that stuff. Like,
like
I say, 3 days in a row, funny spelled perfectly.
Yeah.
Eve of the test and the day of the test is where she starts to get stage fright and it gets jumbled. So anyway,
that's okay.
Just doing my best and I appreciate this parent-teacher conference that you and I have scheduled. Thank you so much.
Bill's in the mail. It's all good.
So let's talk about this wonderful double record.
Cheers.
Pink Tiger. Congratulations. How are you feeling about the thing?
I'm feeling really good about it, actually.
Yeah.
We worked really hard on it and I'm really proud of this one. I think it seems to be resonating with people. So
Is there before we get into the fact that it is two sides with sort of different sonic aesthetics, Pink my kids have a book. I saw Pink Tiger and I was looking at thanks again for mailing me a record, by the way. That was very kind of you too.
Yeah.
I don't know if I forgot to send you a thank you. And I think we were corresponding so much. Maybe I did. I think maybe I did. Anyway, it's lovely, lovely, beautiful artwork. I love the whole thing. But it reminded me vaguely of are you familiar with a children's book called is it called Mr. Tiger Goes to Town or something like that? Where it's like a tiger who leaves like he wants to be more less civilized. It's like a bunch of animals and they're all wearing clothes. And he's like, this is, I don't like this. So he takes all his stuff. And the artwork even reminds me of this similar kind of aesthetic. No, you don't know what I'm.
I haven't, I mean, it sounds familiar. My wheelhouse of books is like so massive that, you know, I've probably come across it or used it in a class at some point, but there's just so many, right? But yeah.
Well, it just visually it reminded me of it. But I wonder, before we get into the record itself, Pink Tiger, what does that connote for you as an umbrella title?
Yeah, I think the at least the image of it. I had my friend Aaron Reed, who's like an amazing musician and visual artist and comedian here in Vancouver. I asked him to kind of design like a 60s kids book kind of feel to it, but a little bit more psychedelic or something. And so he knocked it out of the park. So I think for me, like, even just the visual of the album sort of like kind of captures what I'm trying to get at. And like the two sides, like obviously like one side is quiet and like introspective and the other side's like, you know, a bit more effervescent. So like, you know, the idea of like pink maybe being like a kind of like soft and warm feeling, and then a tiger, maybe something a little bit more, you know, ferocious. I don't know. Hmm. But there is also like a deeply personal connection to that combination of words that I won't necessarily get into, but okay. Yeah, there's a few meanings. Yeah, anyway.
No, I appreciate that, and I didn't mean to pry, but
no, that's a yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. So as you suggest, there are two sides to this record, and to be reductive but maybe accurate, quiet side, louder side. Is that a fair? I think that's fair. Yeah. Let's talk about. This is not unusual. Lots of artists do this or have done this sort of thing. Both sides are quite spirited and emotional. It's not like one is more of somber necessarily. And I hear lyrical allusions between the two sides here and there too. Yeah. So there's some.
Yeah.
Why conceive of this record in this particular way, kind of a quiet, loud thing, like a Pixies song? why conceive of it this way? And also, tell me about how they're connected, if you can.
Yeah, for sure. I think like prior to the pandemic, like the sort of tiger side or the more rock and roll side, most of those songs were in the can and they were ready to go. And then that's when the pandemic hit. So we kind of had to put them on the back burner. And then I also had like dozens and dozens of sort of quieter songs that I had been just sort of working on alone at home. And so when the pandemic hit, I thought, you know, obviously we're not going to be playing shows for a while. I thought like, well, here's an opportunity to maybe sort of explore that other side of music that we had touched on a little bit, but I was like, I'd always wanted to make something like that. And so, I basically just bought a decent recording device, a decent mic, and sort of taught myself how to record better.
Oh, you'd never done this before?
Not really. Like I
at
had
home.
Recorded.
Yeah,
I had recorded a little bit, but I wanted to get better at it. Like I was like, you know, I have a baseline, like okay recording knowledge, but then I was like, oh, what if I actually, you know, because I have all this time to work on it, why don't I teach myself how to record properly? So yeah, it was kind of like a pandemic project, but also like I really also didn't want it to be like a pandemic blues record, you know, like but like
no, it's a it's a product of the pandemic, but it's not necessarily reflective of it per se. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, like because a lot of the songs were already written, it was just more about like recording them. And so I just kind of record stuff. I'd get Amanda to kind of like hit the tubs a little bit, and then I'd send it to Robbie, and then Robbie would add his bass, and then it just kind of started to flesh out into this like really cool thing. And I was like, wow, like, and then, you know, we had toured a lot with Robbie, and we always joked that like wow, Tusk was always like our sort of like pinnacle album, like in terms of like we could all agree on it, we loved that record, and we were just like, what if we like tried to make our own, you know, Tusk, like this really ambitious, ridiculous, like double record. And And then I was like, well, what if we combine the two? Like, after things started to ease up and restrictions eased up, we went over and recorded the other side in a studio. And then it just kind of was like, yeah, I was like, wow, this could actually work. So yeah, we put it together. And then I just like that idea of like, maybe it's a Sunday morning and you're just like having breakfast and you can just put on like the Quiet Side and you don't want to rock. Hmm. But then if you feel more like, you know, it's like a fun night and you're just like, oh, I want to, you know, listen to something a little bit more upbeat, you can put on the other side. So, yeah.
First of all, for those who don't know, Tusk is the Fleetwood Mac album you're referring
to? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Are you a fan of their other works? People really, in our realm, really love Fleetwood Mac. I've discovered this over the... When I was growing up, Fleetwood Mac had a certain connotation.
Right.
Particularly if you grew up observing like the Bill Clinton election stuff, because he would use Fleetwood Mac music, and it just felt so boomery to me. Like, I was like, Fleetwood Mac, like it... Right. And the songs that were singles when I was growing up were not... So, ostensibly the 80s and the 90s, I don't know. Is that period as well-respected as their... The period you're describing? I don't know.
I don't even know. Yeah, I've always been a fan. You know, like I just like good songs. You know, songs I can sing, and I'm trying less and less to kind of like worry about like that kind of stuff. I'm just like just go straight to the song. You know?
Oh I'm just saying. Growing up, that was my perception. Yeah. And sometimes your as a kid, your perceptions can be wrong. I recently found out that one of my favorite Fugazi songs. Influenced by a Fleetwood Mac chord move. It's not a... Well, I guess it is a progression, but they just did something with an A minor. I think it's an A minor. And slid it. And that's the song Last Chance for a Slow Dance by Fugazi.
Right.
I heard through this other really great podcast called The Alphabetical Fugazi that in their research and a conversation with someone... Guy from Fugazi had referenced this. I hope I'm getting all of these facts right, because I'm spitballing here. All this to say, like, I know people like... And then as a fan of Sloan, they would often talk about Fleetwood Mac in the press in the 90s. And I'm like, what? Oh, okay, I thought this was just that older schlock rock band that I didn't get. But
well, I mean, my parents were definitely boomers and definitely had that, you know, weird record with... Or I guess it was Rumours.
Rumours is the key one, right?
Where he's standing and he looks like he has two like balls hanging from his pants and or whatever. and you know, listening to that as a kid, I was just, you know, like those songs are so memorable. And but yeah, I hadn't really listened to Tusk that much until I met Robbie and our bass player. And yeah, it was just like, I think it was just, we just laughed at the, you know, like the coked out, ridiculous way it was recorded, and like it was partially, you know, home recorded as well. And it was like, I think at the time, like the biggest budget ever spent on an album.
Yeah.
And like, I kind of fell in love with that idea. Yeah. Just like the ridiculousness of it.
The lore.
But then the songs are all so good.
Yeah. I spent more time with Tusk than I probably ever have in the last couple of years. And maybe that's revealing a blind spot for me, all the Mac heads out there. Probably looking down on me, but it's good. I had it. It's odd that you mentioned the breakfast thing, because I often Saturday Sunday mornings is usually Sundays. I'm making pancakes for the kids, and I put on
there you go.
Put on an older record just for fun.
Yeah,
and or I listen to the radio. Anyway, it did catch my ear in a way, and I'm like, oh, okay. I subsequently on my music service on my phone was like, you know what. I'm going to try to go through this band chronologically, and I did for a spell, and then I kind of gave up. Anyway, they were...
Yeah.
Is it a sonic inspiration or just their approach that influenced your thinking with this record?
Yeah, I mean, I think we... You know, I mean, obviously, like, we have, like, 1/100th of their talent musically and, like... all that. It was just more like a fun starting point, you know, like just like a funny idea. Like generally what we do, it always starts as like a funny idea. And I don't know. I mean, certainly it's not the only music that I was listening to over that time, you know. Mm-hmm. There's just, you know, our you know, I've been deeply into, you know, like the bands like The Clean and The Bats and stuff like that over the last, you know, 5-10 years. And you know, Dear Nora and like, you know, Beverly Glenn Copeland and stuff like that. So, you know, like Nick Kurgovich and, you know, Destroyer and my interests are huge. So, but it was more like, I don't know, just this funny idea of like the double record. Cause like most small local bands don't make double records, you know, like it seems like a really ambitious, ridiculous, you know, huge rock star thing to do, you know, like, and it seems so antiquated and not of this Spotify era, you know, as well. It's kind of like a,
well, to be fun, to be honest, it's interesting because you've put out a double LP at a time where there's some, I don't think this is actually true as we're speaking, but a couple of weeks ago or months ago, there seemed to be some sort of push towards bringing CDs back.
Right.
And I was always curious about the double CD because most of those, most single CDs you could get 80 minutes on.
Right, yeah.
And they didn't, like, some of them didn't need to be two CDs. It was just the old school idea of a double LP.
Yeah.
Like the timing didn't make sense for it to be. Anyway,
yeah.
My point is, I forget how long this record of yours is, but it is. Oh, it's about 60 minutes. So you definitely that. Did you issue this on CD, by the way?
We did not. No.
Yeah. So you didn't even do it. But this would be. Someone might say, hey, you've got 20 more minutes you could put on this CD if you really want to.
I know, right?
That's kind of a hilarious part of the medium that we're at right now. Because this would 15 years ago, this would be a single CD.
Totally. Yeah, I know, right?
But you've got the artful thing you can do by separating the sides more distinctly this way.
Yeah.
So it doesn't just go from that last quiet song of...
Anyway. Yeah.
No, it's great. Can you talk a little bit about how the songs on each side, if you will? Sorry, there's four sides.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how album one songs interconnect with album two songs? As I alluded to, I hear little lyrical connections, and I wonder if you can speak to the relationship between the two records.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think... there's definitely like some like lyrical play that, you know, connect the two sides. Like we have one song, you know, But I'll Be Around. It's like we did an acoustic version and then we did an electric version on the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, like is a kind of a fun idea. Two different
interpretations. Like a Russ Never Sleeps by Neil Young idea.
Yeah. You know, or
I'm thinking of there's the song, and forgive me, I may be fuzzy on the titles, but I think it's Melatonin 5G alludes to the notion that people were talking during a friend of yours show, and that I believe that comes back later.
It
isn't
does,
that right?
Yeah, it pops up in another tune at the end.
A louder song.
Yeah,
and I liked all of it because I liked the idea that you're playing a quiet song that people probably would talk over if you were playing it, and then as a loud band, you're talking about people talking over music by quieter people when they probably couldn't if you were performing that song.
I
did a little English literature. What is this all? What's going on here about the experiential aspect of live music?
Yeah.
Between these two kind of aesthetic choices you've made, given also that we're only getting reacquainted with the notion of even being together.
I know.
In rooms and how to behave in society when you go to the store, you know, where people are just being, I don't know. They seem like cooped up animals that have been let loose all of a sudden.
Oh, 100%. So
anyway, sorry. Is there any thing you can add about that, or am I just picking some random example that doesn't even matter?
No, I like those little Easter eggs too, you know, like, you know, when bands do that where, you know, like little interplay between songs or themes throughout the lyrical portion of the music. I don't know, like, you know, like it's as simple as, you know, maybe like a life and death side, you know, like maybe is in there. Mm. Or like it's hard to say. Like I mean that sounds like such a weak answer, but like I'll just leave it up to the listener, really. Like I don't know.
I didn't think you were making any particular grand comment. I think the way I framed it may be a little too hoity-toity for what you were even thinking, but I like the notion that the two situations could occur in in two different parallel universes. That's kind of where I'm coming from. So I'm basically wondering if you've created some sort of Marvel Universe-esque situation with these records where if you pay close attention,
yes,
they are on parallel trajectories where things mirror each other sometimes.
Yeah.
But maybe I've only caught the one thing. Are there more things like that, do you think?
There
more
probably Easter eggs? Yeah. And I like that idea of like creating a universe. And I think, like, you know, the albums that I love and you probably love as well are, it feels like you're kind of going into some kind of universe, you know, and or you're able to escape there for a little while. And I think of all the records we made, this one feels like that's maybe more what we were trying to do, is to kind of create like a, just this world or something, this weird world.
Yeah, totally. I know from a narrative I read about this record that it was precipitated by a lot of turmoil. Personally, you had some health issues. I think you had other people were having children. Other people in your band, I mean, were having children, all sorts of things. Can you elaborate upon some of what I'm alluding to, and also whether you feel like that stuff is in these songs in places?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like I actually recorded this album with one ear, which was kind of a bizarre experience, recording it in mono, like in my head. So I kind of lost my hearing in my left ear for almost a year. And I kind of went through a pretty significant health scare due to that.
Sorry, I just had this.
Yeah.
You mentioned Destroyer. Yeah. Dan Behar was just on the show talking about labyrinthitis and how he was worried he had it. And I don't know if it's a loss of hearing, but it's a ear canal thing. Do you know what you had?
I did, and it's since cleared. Oddly enough, it cleared the day after we finished the album.
Okay,
but it's funny, and also funny you should mention Dan, because I ran into him around that time, and I had asked him in the last few years, like, I've been sort of sending records to songwriters to kind of critique or, like, you know, pick out the duds. And I had asked him, like, oh, can you have a listen? And he was like, oh, I'd love to, but he was like, there's something wrong with my ear.
Yeah, that's what he said.
And, kind of funny that he also had some ear stuff. But it's since cleared and it's everything's good. But it was a weird time because I wasn't sure what was happening, and but I just soldiered on and kept recording even though I only had one ear. And then to hear it after, like, with both ears was just like, it was so nice. It was so refreshing to hear. Yeah.
Did it clear up or was there some intervention? I don't mean to pry again. I'm just curious.
I had to have surgery and and stuff, and it was the worst case scenario was pretty bad, but then it turned out not to be that. So
good, great,
yeah, and good. So then it cleared up, and now I have a system to keep me hearing. So yeah, it all worked out, and that was a weird aspect of the record. So definitely lyrically, you'll hear a lot of sort of references to that kind of material.
Oh, okay. So it totally impacted you. You wrote about it as much as you could.
I wrote about it as well. Yeah, some of the lyrics, not all of them, but, like, you know, there are some songs that kind of, you know, dig into that.
Okay.
Life,
well,
and death and stuff.
Was there anything else going on in the band's life or your life that may have influenced
this? Yeah, for sure. I have, my family, my folks are, getting older and going through their own things, and but then I'm also, like, a quiet observer of other people, and, putting little things that I, hear into lyrics as well. So it's not all about me per se, but
And it's not all dour.
No,
I pick up on a lot of spirit in it. I don't. In fact, it seems. Is it a hopeful record? Would you say?
I would say so. Yeah, I think so. I think that it is, and there's lots of love in there too. For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you said something earlier that I want to get to about recording yourself, and you said something about time, which I think is interesting because with this pandemic stuff, some of us have become reacquainted with the notion of having more time to do things and also losing track of time. Like, it's hard, every day sort of feels similar. You probably, like the rest of us, had a bit of that going on, but then you had the experience of not being pressed by studio pressure to get something done, so you weren't paying more. How did that impact you artistically? Did you feel like you, obviously you can spend more time on songs and refining things, but did you, that parameter some artists like, okay, I have no lyrics for these songs we've been working on for 6 weeks, but I'm going to write them all today and then record my vocals tomorrow kind of thing. You know, that's not unusual to hear. So that, not having that parameter, how did that impact you artistically? I'm just curious.
I don't know, like, maybe it's a bold move to like say like, oh, I can self-record and this is going to sound good. I mean, our typical trajectory is like, we'll write a batch of tunes. We would go to JCDC studios and have Dave sort of scour at us as we're trying to play them. And then, you know, he makes them sound better. And so like the idea that I would be able to actually produce something high quality enough for consumption seemed a bit daunting. But like when I brought it to Dave to do the mixing, he, you know, he kind of gave me a bit of a side eye, but like I think it was okay. Like he didn't have to do too much to the mixes. He certainly improved them, but definitely a weird.
You recorded the quiet stuff at home, right? Did you record?
I did, but
yeah.
I recorded the quiet stuff at home, and then I took and then we recorded the other stuff on at Jordan Coop's studio, Jordan and Terry's studio over on Gabriola noise floor. But then Dave mixed everything. So.
I see. So Dave,
probably
vocationally was like, I could have done all this for you, buddy.
Like Dave and John have like done pretty much everything we've ever done, and so it feels weird to kind of like step out of there and be like, I can do this. And but the reality is like the technology is getting so good, and so many bands are now able to do a lot of it at home, the kind of boring part. But there's a comfort there like too, where you can muck around for hours and days and weeks and until you get kind of like the right feeling on a song, versus we've booked it for 3 days. I really have to get this.
Mm-hmm.
So there is definitely a laid backness to, especially the first part of the album.
Yeah, no, that's what I hear, and I appreciate that you recognize the strengths and weaknesses of that sort of isolated. Like I'm producing myself and recording myself. Like,
yeah,
there are pros and cons to it, I guess, is what you're saying. But does this does this suggest the future? Like, what are you going to do in the future? Would you? The other side of it is, you're in British Columbia. There were protocols, but also one of the provinces to sort of say we're not doing a lot of isolation stuff. So I'm curious. Mm. You started this at home because things were locked down, right?
Yeah,
out of necessity. Then, did you think in your mind, oh, these will just be the demos, I might as well make demos, and then eventually we'll go to the thing? Or did you always think, you know what, I'm home, I can do it, it sounds pretty good to me, I'm going to keep going?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. It was possible that they would become demos, because I wasn't sure if the quality would be good enough. But when I bought, I sort of knew that like if I had invested in a decent sort of recording machine and a decent mic, that things would get better. And, you know, like, Dave kind of helped me a lot with that, and just kind of picking things that would work. But then, I sort of started to believe in myself a bit more, and like, you know, learning how to use Logic, which is a recording program, and stuff. And the songs aren't overly complicated in terms of like instrumentation. Like there's not that many tracks on them, so it wasn't too hard to do. But yeah, it is. I think in the future, like, I would like to be more involved with the recording process, but at the same time, like, it is fun. It's always fun to go to a studio and just be like, I don't have to think about any of this. I just play the songs, and So
I see you're using a fancy looking mic right now. Is that the
I got this off Craigslist. Some guy was selling it. It's a AKG 414, and it's kind of like the Swiss Army knife of condenser mics. And yeah, Dave told me to get that, and that's what I got. So
oh wow, so you're using the mic for this chat that you used on the album. That's magical. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, into the same machine too. Yeah.
Wow. So we're making a record right now.
We are. We could remix this. We'll send it to John Collins. He'll turn it into a dance track.
Oh man, we should totally do that. I can put it at the end of this episode. I'll mix my version, and then we'll post the remix.
There you go.
That John comes up with. No, that's cool. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've made the most of a tumultuous time for you personally and for us generally. So congratulations on that.
Oh,
and
cheers. Yeah, thanks so much.
So as we get into things, again, as we're speaking, things were opening up. Now there's the drumbeat of things are getting worse. As we're speaking, who knows? By the time this comes out, we don't exactly know how things will be. But do you have future plans at the moment in terms of both potentially touring? Oh, you're a teacher as well, so I assume that wouldn't be occurring till the summer, right?
We have quite a few shows booked. We will do some like Weekend Warrior stuff here, like playing in and around BC, and then we are going to tour Canada as much as we can in mid-July. And then we're supposed to go to the UK to do a tour as well.
Oh wow.
You know, our fingers are crossed that things can happen and that, you know, like, you know, new variants don't emerge and wreak havoc, but you know, just living one day at a time, just kind of hoping for the best that things can happen. And we had our record release show a couple of weeks ago, and it was just so joyous and so fun and you know, super safe and stuff. And yeah,
that's great. Really, where does that happen in Vancouver? Where did you play in Vancouver?
We played at a place called Red Gate, which is kind of like a art gallery, jam space, art space, kind of a
Red Gate. Oh, spot. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some venues that have. I remember playing the Railway Club. I've heard that's gone.
I'm the worst person to ask about that because I haven't been there in a long time, but I feel like it was purchased by somebody called the Donnelly Group or something, and it got maybe turned into a something, but I...
Okay, sorry, and I'm wrong, it's hard to keep track of all the venues that we're losing to various forms of gentrification, in my... I think I made mental note of it because I'm like, oh, I played there once. And
you played the same stage as Radiohead then. There you go.
They played the Railway Club? I didn't know that.
They played the Railway Club.
It's such a tiny place. Yeah.
I know.
Wow. Okay.
It was like, I can't remember what album. It must have been like their first album or something. But there's
The Bends?
It must have been the...
Oh, the first one's called Pablo Honey.
Pablo Honey era. But yeah, they did play and they got heckled and they stormed off the stage and left.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, as we're speaking, it's not that funny, but last week on the show, the episode preceding this one featured Pavement.
Oh, yeah,
and
right, yeah.
We were talking about the Terror Twilight reissue.
Yes.
And Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead
plays
harmonica on a song or two, I think, as I recall. Anyway, it was just interesting to talk about Nigel Godrich and his role in that band at that point in Pavement, who he was the Radiohead guy, and he brought in, why don't we get the Radiohead guy to play harmonica, which you know, it seems a bit random and in some ways, but Radiohead keeps coming up on the show is what I'm saying, so that maybe I'm getting a sign from the universe that I need to call them up and ask them what it was like to be heckled at the Railway Club in Vancouver
in the mid-90s.
Well, anyway, I hope Vancouver is doing okay. I don't really know. I haven't been in a while, but everything's chill. You're happy. Everything's good.
Yeah, we're good. You know, I think BC had, you know, super high vaccine uptake, so we're doing well. And and in general, like the band is happy, and we're so excited to be playing together again and making music. And
it's great.
Really good. Yeah.
So, Adrian, if people want to learn more about this record and your band and I know it's out on You've Changed Records,
yep.
And I'll link to some of these things in the podcast description. But if you don't mind, like, where yep. would you like people to go to learn more about you and your work and future plans?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. You've Changed Records is great. We have a website, just apolloghosts.com is good. Bandcamp is great, and we're on, you know, we're on Spotify, whatever. You know, it's a weird place to be, but it's there too. Yeah, so yeah, check okay. those spots out for sure.
All right, yeah. No, that's, you're on all the stuff is basically
we're on
what
all
you're
the
saying.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah. You just yeah. yeah.
Find Apollo Ghosts wherever you can. yeah. If we can go out on a song from yeah. this record, I wonder yeah. if you can pick one for us to hear, and also tell us why you wanted us to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Saturday, so it's still upbeat, it's sunny. So I'll go for the more effervescent side. I'll pick Spilling Your Guts, and yeah, that's maybe the first song that I ever put distortion on the guitar. So
oh, in your
yeah.
life.
Well, not in my life, but just like we usually don't use effects pedals or anything like that. We just plug in just dry into the amp. So, yeah, I was kind of like, oh, let's put a little dirt on there. And so, yeah, it's kind of fun to stomp the box and have a bit of a crunch on the guitar. So, yeah, we'll try that one.
Okay, well, it's appropriate given that we just had an hour-long confessional chat as well. So let's hear this new music by Apollo Ghosts from their wonderful new record, which it's out now. It's called Pink Tiger. This is Spilling Your Guts. Adrian, this was very lovely for me. I hope you enjoyed yourself, and I wish you the best luck with everything in the future.
Cheers. Thanks. It's I always love listening to your show, and it's an honor to be on it. And yeah, thank you so much for having me.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring.
At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, thanks again to Adrian Teacher for appearing on this, the 679th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, thank you for listening to this, too, and for listening this far in the episode. You're listening to the very end. This is the concluding statement, and you're still here. That's amazing. Thank you. Hey, if you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it on the internet, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. All of your Vishkana needs are pretty much there at vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at vishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast and compensate me for some of the work I otherwise do for free, if you don't mind. You know, these podcast companies, they don't pay us to have our shows on there, but you guys listening, I mean, hey, you're the support network. It's amazing. I thank you for listening as always, and if you want, please go to the Patreon and support the show that way. $6 American or more grants you access to exclusive content, some of it generated from some overtime chats with guests. Currently, in fact, there is some exclusive content from this Adrian Teacher interview that will be going up on the Patreon if it's not there already by the time you hear this. I also dig into the archives sometimes, my audio archives and my video archives, and I post things that I can find because if I think you might find them interesting. So yeah, there's some perks, but it's also, like I say, I guess the spirit of the thing is you're supporting me and my ability to do this work. I really wish this was all I had to do. I have a day job. Wife has a day job. We work, but this is my love and my passion. So anyway, I appreciate all the support on Patreon. And running low now on these Creative Control t-shirts that I've had in stock for a few years. Just got rid of the last medium red one. If you'd like a Creative Control t-shirt and you support the show on Patreon, message me there and I'll get you one while supplies last. Again, patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and order things from their website there, blackbird.ca. Also, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support. Thanks, as always, to my friend Jim Guthrie. You can learn more about Jim and his music at jimguthrie.org. And like I said earlier, thank you so much for listening to this episode featuring Apollo Ghost. Check out their record, Pink Tiger. It's great. And please consider following or subscribing to this podcast if you're so inclined, and telling your friends about the show and going on Reddit and all those places and saying, hey, there's a show, it's good, you should check it out. That all, I see that sometimes and it helps. So thank you for sharing the love, your love for the show elsewhere. And that's it. I will talk to you very, very soon. Be well. If you go to shows, wear a mask. I tell you, everyone will be happier. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.